Shack. Oh, it's good.
Recording in progress.
Okay, welcome everybody. We'll get the meeting started and we'll do that with a roll call.
Susan Fowler.
Here.
Neil Sharma.
Here.
Kim Fisher.
Here.
Ann Robin.
Here.
Vicki Nyswander.
Here. And I guess our first order of business would be to have a motion and second to include Dr. Sharma in our meeting today, since he is on Zoom.
I'll motion to include him.
Okay.
Second.
Any discussion? All right, Dr. Sharma, I think we're going to vote you in, but we'll take the vote here in a second. I just want to remind you that we want to hear from you during the meeting. So anything you have to say, questions that you want to ask, please do so, okay?
I will. Thank you so much. I'm trying to work with my schedulers to try and clear up. I don't know what the mishap is, honestly. So I'm hopefully going to be attending the meetings in person.
Yeah, that would be great to have you here. Okay, all those in favor say aye.
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 We went off. Okay. Approval of the agenda. I need a motion to approve that on page 1 and 2.
I move to approve the agenda.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. Any changes needed? All those in favor say aye.
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 My mic is off again. Okay, let's go on to beyond some of the things that are just in the agenda for information only to citizen input and public participation. Do we have anybody who wants to speak to the board this morning? Anybody on Zoom? Okay, I'm going to assume not. Do we have anybody on Zoom? Okay, very good. Chairperson's comments. I just want to say that this week I went to a political forum and a protest. So I encourage all of you to do this. It made me feel a little bit better to do that, given the challenges that we're all facing. Mainly because it put me in a group with people who were feeling the same way as I was, and with all the turmoil that's going on in our political system right now, it was really helpful to me personally to be a part of that. But, you know, to sit back and not say anything or do anything except just complain to yourself about things the way they're going, it does help to be with other people. So I encourage you to do that. Do, even if it's just contacting your congressperson or your legislators in the state, or, you know, writing a letter, I think it helps. So my political statement for the day, and I'm going to turn it over to Lynn for her comments.
So I also have comments today. And I have a 34 pages of comments in the board packet, so I'm going to try not to.
I did notice that.
Sorry. Okay. Those are shorter than the original version because I had to take out things that people had said that might get them fired. Some people had asked us not to document certain things. I'm glad they told us anyway. So where there wasn't an easy way to cover that, I just took it out. There's a lot of discussion in there that relates to the big threat to our work, which is cuts to Medicaid. There's another big threat that's in my notes that we're not going to talk about today that's not been discussed very much in Illinois, but we are finding ourselves in a lot of meetings with others around Illinois talking about Medicaid. Last week I was in a meeting which it was leaders of a whole bunch of trade associations, like what can we do to stand against the proposed cuts to Medicaid. And, the information was, it won't be news to most of you that the people who really need to hear from us are not answering any calls. And they're also not holding town halls. And they have been instructed not to do that. So there's a whole bunch of stuff now that's just beyond our control. I love that, you're saying going to a forum and a protest helped you feel better. I think filing witness slips helps me feel better. I can forward you some opportunities for that. But, you know, the big thing, an audience with somebody who could really change the direction isn't possible. And further, the attorneys on this meeting said they're also keeping track of who's making loud public objections about Medicaid cuts and planning retaliation. And like, well, we're in the space there where I kind of don't care. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so anyway, and that feels good too, because this whole system relies on pieces of Medicaid as they are, continuing as they are, specifically the waivers. There's a whole bunch of work being done around the country that's very valuable through waiver programs, not just these 1915 waivers, but also 1115 waivers. And, you know, the sentiment of colleagues across the state and country is we need to at least keep these waivers, and if not, make them permanent. So anyway, that's my... I wasn't planning to say it, but thank you for opening that up, and then I could say it. I was planning to tell you that we don't yet have a lease agreement for moving to new offices. The agreement presented to us is actually like it's not more money. At first, it appears to be less money, so there's nothing really earth-shattering to report. We also don't have a move date. We plan to take care of all that next week. There are no other current updates to share with you about 2025 funds. That's as much as I can really say. But just that the calculations you'll see later in the packet about what might be affordable of the agency funding requests, those calculations are mostly based on what will be affordable in 2026, not affected by 2025. The challenges that I'm planning around in 2025 don't really impact that amount. So I think we're okay. And then the other big fun thing is we've been working with some students from the Stats Club this year, and it's really fun. We've been meeting with them once a week, and they're giving us all sorts of really cool data presentations. Like, our data are very simple, so there's not a lot they can do with them other than make them visually interesting. And then they discovered something that Kim Bowdry works on, and now they're digging in to that. That memo is in this packet, like to work with some of those data. So that was super exciting last week, and then they went on spring break. So it's students, you know, we're not paying them anything, so if we don't get a product, like any product at all, or not the product we were hoping for, it's okay. It's still time well spent, but I think the things they're showing us are very usable. So looking forward to, yeah, anyway, that's enough. Okay.
Yes, Susan.
I just wanted to make a comment. Sorry. Maybe I wasn't aware of it, but in your briefing memo, you note that you're serving as vice president of the NACBHDD, a new member of NACO, and a member of the NACO Healthy Counties Advisory Board, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Thank you for all of your national service, your state and national service, because it's really remarkable to have someone so much in the center of what's going on. And I know it takes time. Much appreciated.
Well, thank you. And I've really gotten a lot out of it for our work. The vice presidency of NACBID is related to why I'm on the NACO board. I'm just the vice president of NACBID always serves as liaison to NACO. So it's not a lot more time. It's really good information to have, like what we think we're doing in Illinois is connected to what the federal government is willing to do. And for the last several sessions, they haven't been able to do very much. But we keep saying the same things. The simple thing that you'd think would go somewhere is identify a distinct Bureau of Labor and Statistics classification for DSPs, because the work they do is completely different from other types of work that are lumped into the current category. Like, it's got home health aides and all other, you know, just the, but the, there are an estimated like 26 competencies that DSPs have to have to do the work. I better stop because I'm about to slip into the other federal threat to our work that has to do with workforce, and I don't want to take up your time, but thank you.
Okay, moving on to, where are we? Approval of the minutes from last month.
Kim, my motion to approve and thank that I am included in the minutes.
Thank you for that. And mm-hmm. I'm glad you're included as well. Mm-hmm. And seconds, any other conversation on this? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
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 We've got some extra.
And it's like, I just need to look at the
button.
Let's
just have you like a press conference over here.
Okay. it just goes off by itself. It's okay. Vendor invoice lists. We need to accept those as well.
Move to accept.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. Any changes? Oh my gosh. Okay.
See?
All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay, let's move on to staff report. You know, yeah, we did the vendor invoice list. Staff reports. Lynn's is the only one in there. I hope you all had a chance to read it, but my gosh, that was depressing.
Sorry.
So I guess all the national and state organizations are in as much turmoil as we are. So I guess it helps to all be in the same boat, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, I have a comment. Words have meaning, and yet the words that we are hearing have very different meanings than they used to have, and very different meanings than we might think that they have. So when you're listening to officials or whoever, politicians talking, you need to pay attention not just to their words and the sentence structure, but what's the background meaning of them. So on page 10, Darcy Johnson, who's a newly appointed, and I'm thinking, oh, newly appointed, what does that mean? Well, with the new administration, and I'm reading the report, words like new initiative with radical accountability. What does that mean? You know, we need to pay really close attention to what people mean by that. And there's something about the healthcare system failing. Mm-hmm. You know, I am part of the healthcare system, and I've been complaining about it for decades, and I have ideas about things that could be improving. But tearing the whole thing down to the ground in order to improve it or rebuild it seems to be part of the philosophy. Chronic disease skyrocketing, that's nothing new. We've had chronic disease for a long time. Skyrocketing is not really a good word to use for chronic disease. And to say that the system treats symptoms rather than disease is a really crude and uninformed way of describing the system that we have, which is a patchwork system that doesn't always meet everyone's needs, but is way beyond treating symptoms. So this statement, you know, chills my blood in some ways, mm-hmm. but in other ways I'm like, okay, we just really, really, as much as I don't like listening to some of these people when they talk, we have to pay attention. Mm-hmm. And to say that WHO mismanaged the COVID crisis is so beyond. I mean, first of all, WHO didn't manage the COVID crisis. It was done on many, many, many different levels. But this is poison. This is pure poison. And I will go on the public record for that. And go ahead. Go at me, attorneys.
Thank you.
I'm 74 years old and I'm retired. So.
I second that. I completely agree. There's a lot that we need to change about the healthcare system, but this is an absurd extremist approach to it.
Can I
respond? Go, of course.
So this was, you'll notice, this was the first thing that happened. It was 8 o'clock in the morning, the first day of the conferences, and it really did feel like a gut punch. I want to celebrate some good news. You said we're sharing the suffering. Yes, that was really a relief. But also, both of these conferences were more well attended than they've ever been, and the staff who support the conferences told me this is because people are saying they need to know what's going on. So I felt like I was in really good company. I also want to celebrate that it seems to me like county elected officials across the country have a much better understanding of the realities of healthcare and Medicaid and what it does. Like, they didn't a few years ago, but they get it now. And that opening keynote, like, she ran out of the room and said, I'll be available outside if anyone wants to talk to me. But we had work to do. We had a number of sessions to complete on these topics that matter so much to us. And when we got to the part I was supposed to facilitate, my group said, we can't do this after what just happened to us this morning. So I said, well, let's change the assignment. And we did. We made a wish list of the things that our communities need from the federal government instead of answering the very detailed policy questions that we were supposed to address. We were like, if there's no Medicaid, why are you asking us to figure this out? So thank you. It really did shade that first day in a pretty terrible way. And then there was something similar on the third day.
But so did she just dip in, put you in the gut, and then leave, say, I'll be available, but she wasn't really available. And she didn't listen to any of the rest of it. No listening involved. Okay. That's what I thought.
But I'm sure that there were also officials in the room who understood and believed some of the values that the Make America Healthy Again initiative wants to promote. It's just they didn't even have a chance to talk to her. Like, no one did. So it was, you know, good and bad. Like, I'm in very good company there, but also federal officials didn't want to talk to us for the most part. Many declined to come and talk to us at all. So that was other big news. That's, you know who came to talk to us?
Kennedy.
Ambassadors from Canada.
Oh,
I'm not kidding. And then we went to a reception at the embassy, and they said all the same things again. But as opposed to, you know, big federal stars. Anyway, okay.
Yeah, I just to pile on here, I went to this conference or meeting with a couple of legislators from the Chicago area, statewide legislators, and I learned that if Medicaid gets cut, Illinois Medicaid will automatically get cut.
Right.
It's in the law now.
There is a piece of legislation to fix that.
Well, let's hope they do it quick.
We're strongly supporting it.
Okay. All right. Moving on. We are at New Business Evaluation Capacity Building Project. For what? She's gonna tell us about it. Report.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So the evaluation project has been going on for 2 years. We're very excited about the work that we have done. And we're up for renewal for the next 2 years. And I think that Lynn will talk a little bit more about what the motion is and the continuation of our great work and the great work of the agencies. So,
any questions? Yeah, let's do the motion. What page is that on?
Oh,
48. Okay, so the motion, I'll do this. The motion is to authorize the executive director to enter into a 24-month extension to the contract with the Family Resiliency Center for the support as proposed, with a start date of May 1st, 2025, end date of April 30th, 2027, and total cost of $271,686, pending approval by the CCMHB. So we need, that's the motion. We need a second for that.
Second.
Thank you. Discussion. Susan.
Because I'm a relatively new board member, I wasn't here when the contract was first funded, and I do remember the other evaluation project, and I'm just asking for some affirmation that the agencies feel that their needs are being served through this evaluation, and it would be helpful just to ensure that, given the amount of money we're spending, it's considered to be very useful by the agencies who have been struggling, I know, to report outcomes.
Mm-hmm. So who has provided that assurance? Anyone?
We have a survey results are in this. Where is that? 45 and 46. So there's a, in the memo, there's a sort of like a summary of what they've done for the first 2 years, and links so that you can see the cool videos. Okay, and then where is our, oh, here we go. The survey responses that we launched the survey in January, it was just 3 weeks. And then the responses are summarized here. People are interested in learning more about how to organize data, use a logic model. They wanted more technical assistance and how to define meaningful and measurable outcomes for special populations, for example, adults with DD, or for unique services. And this is a mental health board-funded question, peer support and mentoring, because there are a number of peer support contracts. And then we grabbed a couple concerns that people expressed that actually were things we had done as staff. Like, we decide which programs we think should be the target programs. That has traditionally been in the decision memo that you're looking at in May as a contract provision. So you're also, you know, blessing that idea. But if an agency doesn't want to do it or doesn't have the capacity to do it, we're not pushing it. So it's best if we ask them beforehand. I think people didn't understand how you got chosen to be a target. I wanted to make sure we take responsibility for that. And then this idea of what's an appropriate outcome measure and method. This has to do with the quality of funding applications, and this is not something that we shouldn't be telling people how to have a competitive advantage in an application if the whole public doesn't have access to that information, which is why everything they develop, we're making publicly available and putting it into our website.
So, according to the information you have here, you provided three agencies with a fourth added the second year. In the next 2 years, will there be ongoing effort with those same agencies, or are you going to want to work with new agencies at that point?
So a couple of points. So for that, that really depends on the board staff and the board to inform that process. I think there's a way in which agencies should be graduating from technical assistance if they're no longer needing it, and then that leaves space for new agencies to then come into the fold. So we're open to both continuing with those who continue to need the assistance and also to add in to move on to new agencies that might need assistance that haven't been getting it before. So I would say it's a both and it depends on their needs identified by agencies themselves, identified by the board and the board staff.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
And I do have, so I can let you know, we haven't written up our report for year two because it's in April that we'll be sending it, but we actually sent out a survey to those that we are providing technical assistance to as well at the same time that the board was giving out their survey. And I can say that they strongly agreed that we've been responsive to their needs, that we have been flexible, that we have been meeting their expectations, that they have grown in their knowledge of logic models and qualitative and quantitative data analysis and a whole list of different things that we ask them. And all that information will be in our report in year two. So from what we know from working with the agencies that we worked with very closely for the technical assistance, that there has been value added in what we have done. And we also did a survey after our workshop on outcomes, and 96% of the participants said it was very effective or somewhat effective. And 25 different participants were part of that training as well as our most recent. So we've been trying to collect some data along the way and also to find out things that we might need to improve, including what was specified in terms of trying to find specific measures and specific for some of the agencies that have, that for which measures don't currently exist. Mm-hmm. So that's been on our radar.
Mm-hmm. Anne?
Yeah, I have a question that's kind of a comment, actually.
Sure.
That it looks like what you're doing is preparing for the future when you're not immediately available by doing these micro-learnings and these online trainings and workshops. Because one of the biggest criticisms that we had of this kind of service was that there's so much staff turnover that some staff would get trained and then they would leave and then new staff would come in and they'd have to get trained. So is that part of your thinking, is that going to the future, we would have these resources that people could use that would be continue to be valuable?
Absolutely. So our center and our approach, and I also think that the board in thinking about this, was to create long-term sustainable resources, and that also can be utilized at any moment by anybody. And so we're also thinking about how can we take some of the learnings that we have from the agencies that we worked with technical assistance and making micro learnings of things that they found useful, such as creating different forms or instruments that they can do on their own. And we can teach them how to do that and put it into an asynchronous micro learning so that then others can benefit from that as well. And one other thing, I don't know if it came out and what we were saying, is also thinking about making ourselves open to what we call like office hours, so that those who are not receiving technical assistance immediately could also ask us a question here or there that they might have about evaluation, so that it's more real time, but they don't have to be in the – they can still receive support even though they might not be receiving technical assistance as defined by those agencies. Yes.
Oops. So, you know, I do like very much the fact that you're trying to create a resource library that can be accessed by agencies. Do you have any information yet? And I know your video, micro-learning videos are still relatively new, but on how often or how many agencies have accessed the web to look at those?
So I think that's a two-part question. One is the measures repository. And so we did collect information when we had our workshop about how many people knew about it from what was created before and how many people have accessed it. So we do know that. And I would say that it had been underutilized and a lot of people didn't have awareness of it, that now they do have awareness of it. So I think it's being utilized a bit more. In terms of our micro-learnings, we can track metadata, how many people have come to access it. And we did have an upsurge in, especially when applications were being done in January, which is also when our logic model ones went live. So I think they are being utilized. And we are open to agencies and others also suggesting other topic areas that they want in the future. And we've talked about with this board as well and the mental health board about reporting. And so we are working on those to be done this summer and later this spring. So, thank you. Absolutely.
Any other questions? Dr. Sharma, I can't see you, but if you have anything, please speak up.
Oh, no, I'm just soaking, taking it in.
Okay, very good. All right, then I guess we're at a point then that we'll do the vote. Is this just a voice vote?
No.
This is.
It's money.
Roll call.
It's money. Yeah. Okay. It's money.
Susan Fowler.
Approve.
Neil Sharma.
Approved.
Kim Fisher.
Yes.
Ann Robin.
Yes.
Vicki Nyswander.
Yes. Okay, motion carries. Moving on. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your support.
Okay, two, activity data, just presented for information only. Any conversation on that?
This is Kim. I'll just thank you so much for this report, Kim. It's really helpful to see. One of the things I was kind of noticed, well, I guess I wanted to kind of mention. I know that we had discussed a little bit about the federal government's executive order on DEI and targeting programs. So I know that we had discussed potentially maybe not collecting or just on the side, worried about data that we do collect that might target people. Mm-hmm. Is there any movement on that that we would maybe want to change what we're doing? Or,
Well, interesting question, and I would say we do not do self-censorship. If we are instructed that we have to do something that we totally disagree with because that's the current law, then we will combine with the law, but we do not censor ourselves. And we continue to do good practice, which has been time-honored for decades and decades, which includes demographic information. So it's interesting that you raise that question, but I would say on public record, absolutely not. We continue to do what we've been doing, which is best practice.
Anything else?
I wanted to comment that the data are very impressive, and I appreciated it, and I did read through it. I just wanted to be sure that it wasn't creating an extra burden for the agencies to input the data, and that the payoff is worth the burden if it is.
Well, I don't want to speak on behalf of the agencies, but what I will say is that this request was made by board members historically to collect this level of data so they could look at something and see what the fund was doing for people. So this is the, since I started in 2017, this was implemented, and we have been doing it since then. And in prior to, it's in here, 2020, I think, prior to 2021, we changed it to try to be less burdensome on the agencies. I won't say that it's not still more of a burden for them, but doing, I mean, I think unless you guys want to not collect this level of information, we have tried to make it less burdensome.
I just wanted reassurance. Thank you.
There's an expert in the room,
so you could ask them. I'll go back to the bathroom if you want. Go ahead, Kelly. Tell them the truth.
I mean, I appreciate. Thank you, Kim, for taking that. We really did have to stop during. I think it was the first year of data. Like, it was amazing, but it was also too much for people, and they were real honest with us. This is too much, and even gave us a report of how many hours it took to do the reporting. So at that point, Kim narrowed the categories down, and that was a cause of some relief. But I think that is a fair question to ask others.
And we also were in the beginning, claims were entered as quarter hours, and now they're entered as full hours, and we're hopeful that instead of logging something every 15 minutes, that doing an hour is less burdensome. But my feelings won't be hurt if Kelly wants to come up Angela's in the room too,
and you got
Becca's on Zoom, so my feelings will not be hurt if they want to tell you exactly how they feel.
If we have 5 minutes, I think it's worth it, but
I think we could make space. The other option would be folks could email Lynn or me, and pass that information on to the rest of the board. But honestly, we want to make this work specifically for people with disabilities, but the only way that we can do that is by making it work for the agencies that serve them too. So tell us if you've got issues with this stuff.
If we have the luxury of time, because the next contract year starts July 1, it's probably fair to put questions like this on the table. And we, you'll see in the next memo and information that a lot of people are in a kind of a wait and see whether we exist in the coming months. Posture, and so it may be that we have to make some dramatic changes to what we're doing in order to get through a particularly spicy period. I don't know. But we do have some time, so if folks are okay with Vicki's suggestion, I think that's great. And I know it won't hurt Kim's feelings, because it's also a fair amount of work for her. I love it. That's not the reason to keep it.
So, anybody want to have a word about this? They didn't prepare their notes in advance, so... Yeah, please feel okay. Sure.
Becca is online and has her hand raised.
Okay. And you can come up to the microphone. You can be next. Who was it, Becca?
Becca, yeah.
Okay.
We're asking agencies who are currently funded whether the report of individual claims is a burden more than the reward of it, which the reward is well documented, that we know how many services people are receiving, how they move through the system, what changes over time. We can see collaboration across agencies, but the system in which they enter data is actually a little bit tricky, and it's a lot of data that they have to enter. So we're asking, and one person is ready to respond to that online.
She's talking, but we can't
hear you. Becca, we cannot hear you.
Is that better?
There you are.
Can you hear me? Okay. Oh, I'm so sorry. I have an extra mute button on my computer. I just would say Kim probably knows everything that I will say already. I think that the data itself can be valuable, and I think internally we've come up with some good systems to make it relatively efficient for our staff. I will say that it's probably not their favorite, but documentation generally is not. I think that the biggest barrier, or sort of time commitment that I see with it is just sort of the technical aspect of the system, which is extremely temperamental, and sometimes makes me feel like I have, like, I'm doing the same thing 10 times and I get 10 different results, which can be frustrating. But, you know, I don't know that there's like a great way forward without a very big overhaul. So that would be my kind of just initial take on it.
Thanks. And yeah. You know, you guys can just talk. You don't have to raise your hands, okay?
Sounds good. Thank you, Vicki. Sorry. So I just wanted to share, like, I really enjoyed reading. And I guess I don't remember. You probably are like, you get this every year. But so sorry if that's the case. But just really seeing the by program and then by there's a by program and then by client, story is really helpful when we talk with community members about how people in our community are impacted and how agencies are supporting people in our community, and that the amount of hours that are being paid for with tax dollars is really helpful, especially as we come under further attack for our local funding. If we were to get attacked. I did have a question about just to clarify, so the graphs, so bar charts. So the top is the DD fund, and then the bottom is the IDD fund. Is that the stuff? Yeah.
The top is everything paid for by the DDB. The bottom is the three IDD programs funded that the Mental Health Board funds as required.
Great. Okay, thank you. And then the program data, I guess I'm wondering about the county level, or sorry, the town, the graph that's on page 63, so zip code, excuse me, as well as the bar chart on 65, just how like representative of the population in those areas is the funding being? Okay, go ahead.
We can do that pretty easily, but it's we can't, you know, it makes the data harder to look at in this packet. But if you want to see that, it, you know, give me a month and I can put it together for next month. General population data are available, and we can line them up next to this. You know, there was a lot of controversy over the last census results that Illinois did not get it right, but we just use what we have, knowing that it's fuzzy. But we can put it side by side with that, and it just takes a while to do.
Well, and I guess, like, if, I mean, you guys are all very busy right now. So if you want, you know, so if you wanted to make it like a summer thing,
We're always busy,
or I can just come into the office. We don't have to make it a packet. So if you have it, I just am interested. Just because, I mean, you know, 75% of our funding goes to, you know, white people.
Right.
So that's, is our county 75%?
No,
white?
I didn't think so. It's greater than that.
So, yeah. Oh, it's greater than
that.
Yeah,
actually, I don't know. The clerk actually posts census data at the bottom of their homepage. So it's even easier to find than I thought. But we did a, Chandra Somerville and I did a similar study for the Mental Health Board over the summer. So I actually have the census data right next to our categories. So I could probably find that right now and get back to you. Okay. Since you're asking in public, I owe it the answer to the public. But we can do that. Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Lynn.
Yes.
Hi, Kelly Martin with DSC. I was going to respond to the data collection claim system question. Much like Becca said, I think that we've figured out at DSC some really good internal processes that help us to upload information in a very efficient way most of the time. And we're continuing to tweak that. So I don't think that any of us have real issue with like uploading service hours, claim system hours that people do. Sometimes what seems very cumbersome is all of the demographic information, especially at the start of the fiscal year, because you have to report on all your continuing numbers plus your new people. So like for family development, that's like 600 children or something like that. That's a lot of data to make sure that you're getting accurately. And my only thought on that is when I enter someone into the DDB claim system, I put their name, their date of birth, their address, their race, their gender, their ethnicity, everything is already there. And so I'm wondering, is there some way that that system could just run a report per program instead of us having to re-enter all of that demographic every single quarter for those people?
That does make
sense. So that just
sense.
Feels like that's a duplication.
Well, it makes sense in regards to privacy of individuals' data as well. Should that be in a public?
No, it's not in a public. Website. I mean, it's
well, it's run by a public agency.
Sure.
So you know, and websites get hacked all the time.
That's,
so
that's true. But yeah, we have some the site, the reporting site is encrypted and HIPAA compliant, but that's not protection against every threat. You're right.
Sure.
But that's a, we can work on that suggestion. Mm-hmm. So that's another option is like make it better. But yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else want to have a word with us about this topic? You're still looking for that information?
I am determined. Be able to answer it today.
Okay.
I just have one more comment. I find this information to be very, very valuable. And I apologize that it's difficult and time consuming for the agencies. And obviously their time needs to be spent more on services and less on documentation of services. But I was I did a little calculations using my phone calculator as to how much per hour the services per person, how many people were served, how many hours per person, and I just, I did that for myself and found it very interesting. And this is really incredibly valuable services for a very small amount of money that is being paid. And it would be impossible for people to pay that themselves.
Right.
So the lowest amount per hour was $33 per hour per person in one program. And the highest amount was for clinical services was $173 per person.
I did the same calculations. Exactly. And but they're nurses, right? They're providing
those
services.
That was the range. And all of those numbers are very, very low if you look at people buying services for themselves. And we're supporting the infrastructure. We have to remember the infrastructure of the agency has to be supported in addition to the direct service. So I think my calculations for this made me feel really, really good about the value that the county taxpayers are getting for their money. I will go on record for that.
Can I
respond to
you? Yes. So I'm really happy that both of you did that, because every couple of years we do that and compare with the state rates, and we're usually quite surprised to find that what we're paying is comparable to state rates. And yet the state rates are known to be fairly low. I have the demographic information. Do you want to do, so you were right, the general population proportion of white residents is 71%. So are there any other questions related to that? Because I have it right here.
From this graph, it looks like we're not serving Hispanic or Latino families.
And that data point was collected separately until this year. It was a separate category called ethnicity, and that was to align with what the state was doing, but at some point, I mean, we had not updated these categories for probably 20 years. So now that is within race.
And then I guess the other question was just count by zip code. So the other Champaign County, just again, like, are there going to be policymakers in the county that might question, whether or not the money that's being spent is spent in their communities?
And this is difficult because a lot of, like, so for the mental health services, you see more countywide distribution because a lot of, because services can be delivered to people who either, like, they can stay living where they live and come to town for services or get telehealth. But a lot of DD services are location-based because people live in the settings. So we do see, higher rates in urban because of where people live, and we get some feedback from the applications for funding each year that many people choose to live in the city, so they have better access to the buses. So if those questions were to be raised, which would be fair given the results, we can answer given what the agencies tell us in those applications. It's like very, very helpful to have those comments from them.
I just had a comment. I noticed that I put the IDD funded program client race data twice and not the DDB ethnicity. I have that, but apparently I dropped the wrong one in.
Well, just so you know, the students got really excited about this, and they have a whole bunch of ideas for how to present this data. So if they work on that, I'll give them the general population to list alongside it, and you might have something to look at in the next couple months.
Yeah.
It will still be PY24 data.
Fun with numbers.
Also,
Dr. Sharma.
So something that came up at the County Board of Health meeting was a new service that is available at the on the county like website to basically help with some of these epidemiologic like data, looking at various like socioeconomic factors. So, hopefully that will be a resource for agencies and also students who are trying to understand health disparities.
Sorry, I know. I'm going to just jump in, Vicki.
Okay.
So this is really helpful information. And I think to your point, Lynn, like the reason I'm kind of asking these questions is so that we're armed with factual data that people, why people are getting the services where they are getting. I'm sure like the social opportunities, the employment opportunities, those are all happening more often in an urban area just because that's where more of the stuff is available. So that's super helpful. And I just also just tangentially, like, you know, with the Family Resilience Center, as well as with the student clubs and stuff, like the collaboration, while the university could collaborate with our community more, for sure, I think highlighting those collaborations is really important because I think sometimes community members can say, oh, the university doesn't really do much or whatever, but they are doing really, they could do more, but that, you know, incentivize staff and faculty more at the university level. But that's a really great collaboration.
Are we good?
Yep.
All right, then. Thank you very much. Anybody else have anything that they want to say? And like I said, you can always email Lynn or me and share any perspectives that you have. We will welcome them. Shall we say? Go ahead.
Okay. Hi, this is Dr. Allison Jones. I take care of my sister who's disabled and home. So I think one thing to just keep in mind with this is there are a lot of families in our community that are really taking care of older adults in the home setting. Okay. So this is kind of an invisible population because they're not exactly at like a sheltered workshop or other place like that, and the families are doing everything, okay? Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a gap in information in terms of needs of those families as these populations age. I know it's much more like we're looking at younger people. There's more money in it for the agencies to get, I mean, what I have been told, to focus on them, and it's they just don't know what to do with these older people is what I'm told. So I just want to make sure that there's a consideration for that and efforts that public money is being spent. So there are some needs assessments, especially maybe focused on lack of respite care for aging parents. I mean, I'm a next generation support, so I'm like a leading indicator of what we're going to have in our communities as autistic kids age and other people age that, you know, we really is real. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I think that needs to be considered and a focus because I've never had a survey. My mother had never had a survey before I came forward, you know, to take over to help when she died. And so we're an invisible consumer group and we're present. And there's really a Herculean effort, I think, especially on the part of these older parents who are in their 80s trying to do this. So that's something to consider. And in regard to the Family Resiliency Center, I'm glad we're reaching out to do some things with them. But historically, and I had went to ask them, are they doing any research or things like this? I mean, two or three years ago to ask, because a lot of their information online was focused on food availability for lunch programs. And when we really look at the research data and things they were doing, it was this. And when I asked this, the head person, she said, well, I don't have a background in that. My background is kids and this other type of stuff. So we don't know how to do that research. And we reached out to ask some. We didn't get responses. So just Vicky, be careful. I
just
don't know.
Just a point of order really quick. Just sorry. Sorry. Yeah.
That's okay.
Vicky, so is this discussion? Vicky.
Who's talking?
Just really quickly, is this discussion here related to this agenda item that we're discussing?
Not necessarily, yeah. But I do want to say to you, there is an organization starting up in Illinois that's pretty much targeted directly at gathering those kinds of data and getting those families involved that are totally responsible for their family members with disabilities. So we can talk after if you want to,
okay,
for a moment. Now I can share that information,
okay,
with
and,
you.
Okay, and the other thing about the duplicate data entry, where you're having people try to enter it quarterly, that's from a like a information technology standpoint. That should be fixed because it can carry errors or enter errors from a human entry data entry standpoint. Plus, it fatigues the staff. So that's a correct thing to,
yes,
to try to address.
Thanks. Thank you very much. Okay, moving on to, where are we? Results of agency survey. Now I noticed that's a emerging threat survey, but then we had emerging threats under old business too. Is that
separate?
Okay. All right.
This is something we never get tired of
creating surveys and making people fill them out, knowing that this is an over-surveyed community. But it also, so there's a cover memo there, and then Kim's suggestion, we just preserved all of the responses so that you could see them in full. And what I took away from it was, maybe we need to ask again later.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, but anyway, but
because mainly the answer was, I don't know.
There was, yeah. But you had some observations. I'm going to stop talking, but I just wanted to say that's simply what we were doing, just to see and the county board has asked us for input about how agencies that we fund are being affected. And I recently let them know that it may be too soon to tell them that, you know, everyone's expecting big changes and in their funding, and it could be really bad, but they don't know yet. So anyway, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm going to jump in. When I walked in today, I said to Lynn, like, this might have been my most, just this packet was so impactful to me. So just thank you to everybody who put it together. And Leon, this memo, I don't know if he's in the meeting or not, but he is. Okay, thank you. It just, that second paragraph, I mean, I highlighted almost everything that you said, mm-hmm. and or that was written here, which is just reporting, yep. Frankly, what is going to happen to programs should these executive orders really impact mm-hmm. funding or regulations, and it is just horrific. So I think this memo is so important because it helps us to communicate with the county board, and then with other public entities in our community of how impactful, you know, some of these, not just the Medicaid, but just also the executive orders that'll be impact. So I think, like, a really nice message, the survey results, I highlighted a few things that are really good talking points. And when I read this, I was thinking, this needs to be communicated in another venue. So not just in these public documents, but maybe as a letter to the editor or in public statement at city council meetings, at county board meetings. And so I wondered what the board thought about taking some of this information that's reported in the packet and putting it in a letter to the editor at the newspaper, just to inform other people whether people thought that would be an impactful thing or not, or taking this packet and meeting with Nikki Budzinski, you know, like I made a note that Danielle and Delizzo met mm-hmm. with Representative Budzinski, as well as many other, mm-hmm. I don't know where my post-it is, but I listed, you know, four or five other representatives and or senators. So just walking them through, like, these are the impacts. Like one agency said, it would cut staff by 50%. There's stress that would be nearly impossible to ensure that the basic needs of people with IDD would be covered. So I don't know. I'm rambling a little bit because I'm so energized. But anyways, that's my thought. Letter to the editor, bring this packet to Representative Budzinski, Representative Miller, Representative Kelly.
Which comes back to my first comment today, which was do something, pretty much. Do something. Whatever you can do, whatever makes sense to you. Don't raise your hand, Susan.
Okay. I'm so sorry. I have to run. My patient came, so I'll work out the schedule thing in the future. I apologize.
Thank you.
I would just caution us to have as close to a full data set as we can. So I think talking with a representative is a great idea. Here's some emerging threats. A letter to the editor, when we don't have all the agencies responding, just opens us up for criticism by others that want to criticize us. So let's be thorough and not be half prepared. I think it's great to start looking at emerging threats, but not to write letters to the editor until we really have a representative summary
of what the agencies are saying.
And hopefully that won't be too late.
Right.
Yeah.
One thing I can do is just...
Your mic went off.
Oh, that's so... I need the press conference, too. I can absolutely share this with the county board. Just, you know, they wanted, initially the question was, would I come and present this? And then I thought, well, you know, now that I've, they couldn't have me this month, so they were talking about late April. And by late April, things might be quite different. So I think the opportunity is just to share it with them so they have it. Just.
Okay, moving on to a review of applications for fiscal year 2026 funding. I think that everyone probably has dug into some of this already. Is there anything we need to discuss about it?
Well, I just have a couple of comments. One is thank you to Lynn for making the packets that I needed to review available as print copy, because I apologize that looking on the computer is difficult for me.
It's hard to write notes on it.
And
on the computer.
I was able to get through all of them in a fairly timely fashion, because I'm going to be traveling right up to the day before our April meeting. And that, so that's the question. Are we beginning our discussion in the April meeting? So the April meeting is going to be a substantive meeting that probably will last for
a while,
some time. And I know Dr. Sharma has difficulty with patients being scheduled. I do too. I've got patients in the afternoon, so I can't stay longer than noon on that day. And probably a three-hour meeting is about all we can tolerate anyway.
Mm-hmm. There had been some conversation about scheduling an additional meeting, or do we have one already scheduled?
We have that a tentative meeting the, yeah, whatever the, it's a week or two later.
Okay.
And I know Dr. Sharma had to leave, but with email with him, hopefully he will be able to be available at least for that meeting, which would be very, very helpful.
Would you? So we do have the April 30th as a backup, but we can, and this is something we will work on with Mrs. Nicewander anyway, the order of the agenda, could maybe we make sure that the review is first and all the business is later?
Yes.
Okay. And then if we don't get through the business because of time, we have a short meeting on the 30th. Okay.
I think that's a really good suggestion. So we just plow into the very, very beginning. Yeah.
I think you do have to approve the agenda at least, but then, yeah.
But we'll develop it.
Okay. Oh, okay, sounds good. Yeah, I think that's a good plan.
Okay.
All right, anything else on the funding proposals? Moving on to input for people with IDD. Interesting that you selected these three people. Yeah. I've known Curtis and, both Curtis and Bob have been on my radio program before. I've served on boards with them. And I know what's the third person's name?
Amy.
Yeah, Amy. I've known Amy for many years. So I appreciate that. The one thing that I worry about when it comes to interviewing and getting input for from people with IDD is that there are many, many, many who don't have the ability to communicate. And let's not ignore them. Right. We've got to figure out a way to make their communication valid as well. So that's my only comment on this one. Old business, response to emerging threats again. Video for?
We actually have a video to show you for input from people with DD. Do you have the link? You're not on Zoom, so okay. It's going to take me a second to find it because I get, you know, hundreds of emails every day. It's in an email. Yeah. But I'm sorry, I forgot about that.
So while you're doing that, I'm wondering, I know that our local agencies also sharing, having folks share their...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had to... I mean, it's... I have to reach out to people to get this done at all. And so, I've, you know, this video could be really cool. I haven't even seen it yet. This is local. Okay. I'm very excited, and I'm really sorry that I forgot to cue this up for you. And I don't know, sometimes the audio settings are tricky. So I'm not sure you're going to be able to hear this, but we'll do the best that we can. Okay. I wish I could make that full screen, but anyway, let's see about trying to make it full screen.
Okay. There you go.
Now, just the audio is going to be the big.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't have audio. Is anybody else logged into the Zoom?
Yes, I can help.
Could you
guide you through it, or you can send it to me and I can share it.
Okay, and then maybe we come back to this? Okay.
That's fine. Okay. Just send it to me and I'll prepare it and queue it up and let you know when I'm ready.
Thank you, Chandra.
Thanks.
Okay, then let's go ahead to response to emerging threats.
Okay. I can't show my screen right now because I'm trying to send this to Chandra.
Okay. So this is kind of your topic anyway, Kim. You want to take the lead on it?
Sure. So I know that we have these two articles. Thank you, staff, for putting these together about proposed Medicaid cuts, and then the lawsuits filed by 17 states. So I believe we are part of that lawsuit, which is really great. So Attorney General Kwame Raoul put together that lawsuit. As far as I know, there hasn't been any movement on the lawsuit, which is, just to remind everybody, this is a lawsuit threatening Section 504 of the Rehab Act, which would totally dismantle discriminatory protections for people with disabilities. And I'm sorry, I have this wrong. So there are 17 states. We are not part of the lawsuit. But
I was going to clarify there.
I know. I'm very tired. I've not had my coffee today. Thank you. I appreciate board members for correcting my record.
So this is grassroots, as represented by states, against this statute, which protects disabled people. So there are threats coming from every direction, especially Texas.
Mm-hmm. Which I must note, they are 50th out of 50 states on the state of the states. Yes, that's what I read the most recent report. Yeah, so Texas is complaining, and they've got the worst record. Of course, Illinois is not much better.
No,
but at least we have a governor who's trying. So, you know, there's something. Anyway, where are we with this then?
I think uncharted territory. We are in uncharted territory. Especially, I think there is some positive outcomes. So I know that some federal workers have been reinstated based on court proceedings. Court decisions, but I think, as we found the last couple of days, the whole idea of whether or not the administration is going to listen to federal court decisions is a big question. Well, that's true, even though the Supreme Court, so Chief Justice Roberts just did say that we can't impeach federal judges if we don't agree with the decision. So that is a positive. I guess, I think we're in a very just terrible situation. And just, I think I'm not saying anything that none of us in this room, that everyone in this room knows, that the folks that are going to be harmed the most are people with disabilities, people who are immigrants, are, you know, community members who need the most, who are people with disabilities, immigrants, people of color, who are also affected by some of these discriminatory policies. So the more that we speak up for those of us that have power, we need to do that. Yeah.
Thanks.
Sorry, not very well thought out. So.
Okay.
I'll just say it is extremely upsetting and overwhelming.
Yes.
And I will, just from an education perspective, because that will affect kids that we're serving now and supporting now in early intervention. But you know, once kids leave the school system, you know, they'll be in adult systems. I mean, it is very scary of whether or not we'll have any special education or Section 504 supports. So.
All right, moving on. Yes, do you have something? You have your video ready?
Chandra's ready.
Okay, Chandra, we're ready.
Okay.
Why are we here, Theodora?
We are standing up for disabilities and take inclusion.
Take a pledge of inclusion.
I used to get bullied in high school a lot, and so did my oldest son, Andy. So I'm glad DSC has something like this to help people.
What do you do, skin
though? Makes me feel really good to be able to stand up for myself and other people.
Wow, that is really cool. Very cool. Thank you, DSC. Thank you for the advocates for being there presenting that. I love the partnership with the Y, too, in the community. That's excellent.
Yeah, really great. Thank you so much. All right, moving on to the next item. Engage Illinois is meeting a couple of times a week. They are going to be launching their website, hopefully by the end of, it's either by the end of March or mid-April. I'm not real sure of the date just yet, but the first objective is to gather as many supporters for real systems change in Illinois as soon as we can do it. Thousands of people we need, parents, family members, people with disabilities, providers, anybody who cares about this issue needs to be on the list, because that, and the website will be the vehicle for doing that. So as soon as I have that QR code, that website information, as soon as it starts up, I will be sure to share it with all of you. And we've had discussion about bringing somebody from Engage Illinois to present to this group, possibly in the fall. So okay. Looking forward to that, if we can make that work. Disability resource update is in your PEC. The date has been set, which is October 18th, if I'm recalling correctly. October 18th from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Marketplace Mall, and I'm sure it'll be as great as it usually is. Any other information on that at all?
No, just that the posters look really great in the electronic version of the packet. which is posted online, and really horrible in your paper packets. And I'm sorry, I didn't notice that happening, and it was like 9 o'clock at night. So okay.
Really, and we'll have where the next item on the agenda is successes and other agency information. So anybody who wants to share is welcome to come to the microphone.
Morning, Sarah Perry, DSC. I wanted to shed a little light on the dismal conversation that we've all been up against lately. And I have a really great success story, a continued success story, which is even better. A couple of years ago, we had a gentleman that I also spoke to you all about that was living in a situation where he didn't have any running water or heat during the cold winter. So we were able to get emergency shelter at our CU Independence apartment building for him, and he's been living there ever since. He's been working very closely in our community living program, and he's working closely with Angie, a community living specialist that he's really formed a great rapport with. And she discovered that he is 39 years old and has not been to the doctor since high school. And she was very concerned with his health. And through several months of advocating for him to go to an appointment with her, he finally did. And it was kind of eye-opening on what he's been going through. So he's had anxiety, depression, not feeling well sometimes to go to work. They discovered after blood work that he had extreme high blood pressure, high cholesterol. His A1C was in double digits. Asthma, psoriasis. So he went through several more testing. He was immediately put on glucose monitoring and insulin. And so she stuck by him and still is, teaching him how to do everything. He was frightened by needles, but they worked it out. And sorry, it makes me emotional because it's extreme. And he is now doing his insulin on his own. He texts her when he does it with his blood glucose levels, and is very proud of taking care of his health. And I just think it's remarkable that he has just had a 180 from where he's been. So just wanted to share that with you all. And Angie is a rock star.
Thank you, Sarah.
Hi, Hannah Sheets, Community Choices. Just wanted to share that we had our annual member meeting last week. We've grown in membership quite a bit. We typically have about 12 members per year, but between July and December, we had 24 new members. Wow. This year, which is, we don't know exactly why, but it's been great. But so our membership has grown. So we had about 60 people, which is not our full membership, but a good core group of people that came to our membership meeting. And we had breakout tables, four different like breakout areas. But the area that people gravitated towards most was advocacy, you know, what we've all been talking about. And so we had templates available for folks to contact the representatives about Medicaid, Social Security, dismantling the Department of Ed, 504, all that stuff. And so we ended up mailing about 30 letters for folks, and then other people took home the templates to send on their own. So really happy that people are engaging in the work of doing that. So I just wanted to share that.
You have any of these templates shared publicly, or is this something?
We can, yeah. So we created those, and they're on our members-only website, but that's something that we could share with like the mental health and DD agency group for sure, and get it out there, and then publicly on our public website probably.
I think that would be great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Cool.
Anybody else? Anybody on Zoom?
Did Sunday, I will be attending a April group with St. Patrick's Church. In a group within a church to learn more about its activities.
That sounds like a great plan. Anything in particular that the group is going to be doing, or they're just learning about it?
They want in a group that is ongoing and a Catholic church about this activities, and they want more information about the April accounts and pains. So,
okay,
we'll be doing that this Sunday with some co-workers.
Okay, that sounds very hopeful.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Paula. Anybody else? Okay, then, what do we got next? County Board input.
She's here.
She's here. Awesome. On Zoom, I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. She's trying to do it, but.
Oh, there we go. I figured it out. I have nothing to add for County Board right now. I did take some notes that I will share at our meeting tomorrow. Appreciate all of you, as always, and the advocacy you're doing, especially right now where everything is so uncertain. So thank you.
Thank you. All right, Mental Health Board input. No, did you have a question?
Well, this is Kim. I was just going to comment to just publicly thank Jenny, because I think after our last meeting the next day, you actually shared a lot, very specific information to the County Board, and that is very much appreciated. So thank you so much for doing that. I don't know that we've had that in the past. So, yeah, thank you.
I don't think we have. So, yes, thank you from all of us. Okay, Mental Health Board.
Same as always. They meet tonight, and the agenda is very similar to yours. I think I think it's very similar, right? We made these board packets so long ago that I can barely remember. But, the evaluation capacity building project, if they don't want to continue it, then we would bring you some other proposal next month, because the total cost of it is probably too much for either board to carry, mm-hmm. and it would also change the scope of their work if the Mental Health Board chose not to do it. Otherwise, I don't think there's any business in there that will affect you. So, anyway, that's
okay. Very good. Any announcements or input from board members?
So for the work that I do in preparing educators, I myself and some other faculty where I work have curated a list of executive orders that have directly impacted special education and people with disabilities, and then a list of resources and policies or state standards or regulations, federal regulations that require us as professionals to actually not follow those executive orders. And we've been sharing that around. Mostly we've done that to explain this to our pre-service educators or our in-service educators or principals and administrators who are getting services. So if anybody's interested in, it's mostly focused on education, which, you know, overlaps obviously with this world, would like that information, I'd be happy to share that. Because we found that people didn't really understand, one, the language of the executive orders, and then also just have a checklist of resources that actually go in direct contrast to the executive orders. But what I would ask is if anybody, any of the agencies any of the people that we support through our funding would be, my Medicaid stuff is, because it's not my professional expertise, is not as expansive. So if anybody could share, reach out to me, I'd love to talk to you about what other additional information I could share in this resource related to Medicaid. And again, it doesn't have to, school age is more like OT, speech, that kind of thing. But as we prepare kids to transition into adulthood, I think our educators need to better be educated about how that's impacted. So I'm asking if you wouldn't mind sharing that information or if I could reach out to folks that I'll do the work. I'll reach out to you. You don't have to reach out to me. Anyway, so.
Okay. Anybody else? Ann? Susan? Okay, then. I guess we are adjourned. Who had something? Oh, Hannah's up.
I'm so sorry. Oh, thank you. I'm so sorry. Could I have your permission to add one more success? I'm kicking myself for forgetting it. So one of our self-advocates shared at the joint session last fall that one thing they really wanted to do was get their teeth fixed. They've been missing some teeth for three to five years, and they have Medicaid, and so Medicaid covers extractions. They don't cover other things, right? And so and I wanted to share this because I want a record of all these agencies working together. Mm-hmm. So I supported her in completing an application for a CCAMR grant, for a regional planning grant with Angela, working a lot with Angela to communicate them with CCAMR, we were able to get funding to cover over $5,000 worth of dental care between CCAMR, regional planning, and then Community Choices Investing in Independence Fund is covering the remaining funds. So I took her to her first filling appointment yesterday. I've never seen somebody so excited to go to the dentist. Very happy. We have second filling today, and then we need to schedule bridge work and mouth guard work and things. But it's just been great, and it's so great to see funding come together to meet those needs that are not available, the funding is not available otherwise. So thank you.
I'm so glad that it happened for her. On that note, that's a positive, the one positive, well, a couple of positive things, but the one positive thing to end the meeting. So thank you very much for attending. We are adjourned.